welcome back to hour two of Shattering Myths. Okay, now, what we just did was we went over a Swedish vessel, which was the largest at her time and the most advanced navy, and it wasn't seaworthy. If you analyze the Ark's engineering specifications and you compare them against the most advanced ships mankind has only recently been able to build, it's evidence that it's very evident that the proportions that were really 5,000 years ahead of her time rival that of the most advanced ships today. Now, it's kind of hard to come up with a reason as to why that would be. It's in writing. It's there in front of us. It wasn't changed. And the most logical explanation for this reality that I can think of is that someone with foreknowledge wrote it. You know, somebody with advanced degree in naval engineering wrote the engineering specifications for the Ark. And yet that was put on paper over 3,000 years ago. So there really isn't a reason to find the Ark once you realize that. Do you see what I'm saying here, Scott?
I think I do.
Why do I need to see it when he's already laid out the engineering specifications and they rival the most advanced ships only today that we're able to engineer?
Yeah, definitely. And you could recreate it yourself if you really wanted to. He gives it to you. He tells you what it was. So.
Well, that leads us right to a word picture. A word picture is a masal. They call them proverbs today. But 35, it says every word of God being pure, tested, true is a gift and a shield for those who put their trust in him. And he lays out every reason for us to do it. Every reason. You know, one of the other things that I hear a lot is not a lot, but I'll hear it from time to time. You'll see, especially with secular humanists, which is a religion, by the way, and it's secular humanism isn't this religion that's built great things in the world. In fact, in the last century, it killed more people than all the other religions combined. You know, between Mao and Stalin and Pol Pot and a few other despots, they managed to kill over 100 million people. You know, but what I've heard them say is, how can you love this God that had entire groups of people wiped out, which is something that secular humanists have done many times? Yahweh explains why that is. There, you know, there are different places. There's a in a 2,500 year or a 1,500 year period of time, he advanced the notion of war for about 70 years. He condoned war for about 70 years. You know, when he asked his chosen people to go to destroy Jericho, and that's really Yarakal, and it means of the moon. And then a place called Ai, which in the Hebrew text means a heap of ruins, and Gibbon, conveying the idea of an evil and an idolatrous hill. Also Lasash, which means invincible individuals, and Hebron, which is really Chebron, which means to be associated with the cult, the occult. When he had these places destroyed, there was a reason for it. They were a lot like these Nephilim, who were hybrids that were out destroying and being destructive. And these were corrupt people, and they were hopelessly corrupt, and obviously tied to a lot of religious notions based on their names. And had these corrupt people and places been allowed to exist within the promised land, they would have infected and adversely affected the people chosen to be Yahweh's witnesses, meaning you and I wouldn't be reading the words of Yahweh or have the benefit from them today. Their iniquity was a full, according according to Yahweh. And when he says something like that, that depicts a group of people, again, that are like those living in Noah's day, where they no longer had any hope. People like the Canaanites would be able to coexist in there was no hope that people like Canaanites would be able to exist in a civilized way with their neighbors, or any hope that their own children wouldn't become equally as corrupt. And for the benefit of the many, to retain hope, those people had to be wiped off the face of the planet. You know, I'd have to ask people, you know, this is another way to put this. Put yourself in the position of God just for a moment here. Now, if you were God and you could say you could slay Muhammad and his 100 most loyal companions back in 622 CE, knowing that Islam would ravage the world, terrorize and kill, place about 2 billion people over this period of time in submission, in slavery, plunder tens of millions. If you could wipe out Hitler and say 10,000 of the most fervent Nazis in 1938 to spare 50 million victims, would you do it?
In a heartbeat. You'd do it in a heartbeat. You wouldn't even think about it. You would
in
do
1948,
it.
Would you eliminate the 100,000 most loyal supporters of Mao and thus save 60 million otherwise innocent Chinese men, women, and children? Would you do it?
Yeah, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
I would, too. And, you know, obviously these people were similar to them. They may have even been worse. And they would have just destroyed everything in that area. They would have infected everything, and there was nothing good going to come out of them. You know, I've heard people say that this God of the Old Testament, of course, there's no such thing as an Old Testament. There's covenant writings. And then there were witness writings, which were called in Greek, good news. That's how it'd be interpreted in English anyway. And the good news is that the Torah was true and that Yahweh was fulfilling the Moed Mikra that he said he would fulfill. And, you know, I've heard people claim that this God of the Old Testament was like the God of the Quran. Well, the fact is the relationship between nurturing and harsh or moral and immoral verses in Yahweh's words is more than 500 nurturing to one harsh.
Well,
now you go to the Quran and it it's reduced by a factor of what, 50%, 100%? What would you guess?
I have no clue, but
25,000.
If you,
because it goes instead of 500 nurturing to one harsh, it goes one nurturing to 50 harsh.
Well, if you have,
and that means these books are far more different than they are alike in that regard.
You just read them both; you can tell that right away. But if you care about something and you want to see something, let's say a child, you care about your kid. You have kids; you care about your kids. If you can,
you got a crack house next door.
Yeah, and if you could eliminate that house next door, wouldn't that be something that you would do? Wouldn't that be something that would be beneficial for your kids to get rid of?
And for the neighborhood.
And for the neighborhood? And everybody else's kids? I mean, wouldn't you do that? I think I'd do that. I think I'd protect
the kids. Don't think I'd do it too, Scott. I'm telling you. You know, we're just sitting here exposing myth after myth after myth. That's one of the biggest myths that I ever hear, is that the Old Testament sounds like the God of the Quran. They're both identical. No, they're not even close. You know, 25,000 times different. I mean, I don't think you can get much more different than that in that regard. Now, there's another myth that I talked about, and this is the myth that the Creator is omnipresent. You know, he's an emotion called love, and he's standing right outside the door, and he's wanting you to enter that door, and he's just waiting for you. He's hoping for you because he's watching you, because he has nothing better than to do with his time than watch Larry or Scott, I guess. That sounds like a pretty boring thing to do, but apparently that's supposedly what this God is doing, right? That's the religious myth.
It's going to be really boring because there's like we're only an hour apart, me and you, and we're probably both sleeping at the same time. So what's he doing then? Just hanging out? I mean, and that's even creepier.
Maybe he's on the other side of the planet watching everybody else. I don't know, but he does say in Hosea, he says, "My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge," and he says basically because you rejected knowledge, I will reject you from being spokesman for me, and because you've forgotten the Torah of your God, I will also forget your children. It's a little hard to forget somebody that you've been around 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, isn't it? I mean, that's pretty difficult.
You would think it would be, but apparently it's not. Apparently it's just like misplacing your keys or something.
Now, what people read today in what's called a New Testament are witness writings. They're witness writing. They were witnesses, and really the most accurate of all of them is Matanyah. And the reason that it's the most accurate is because from the Greek, originally they were all written in Hebrew, but the rabbis bragged about burning all the Hebrew documents, you know, about the witness writings in the Talmud. They got a hold of them. They burned them all. But there were certain ones from Matanyahu that were recopied back down into Hebrew. And I'm going to read Matanyahu 7:21-23 as it appears on the oldest Greek papyrus. And this is what it says. It says, not, that's meaning in Greek, meaning absolutely never and not under any circumstances at all. Not anyone calling me Lord, Lord shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but to the contrary, those in heaven who do my Father's will. And that would be, you know, the people that actually observe Yahweh's Torah, because that's his will for everybody that wants to meet him. Many will say to me in this specific day, Lord, Lord, did we not speak inspired utterances and prophesy in your name, drive out demons in your name, and perform mighty miracles in your name? Now, I'm going to stop right there. Who does that remind you of, Scott? Is there any particular religious group that might be out there speaking inspired utterances and driving out demons in the Lord's name? Now, I'm going to go back to Matanyahu here. Matthew 7:21-23, where he says, not anyone calling me Lord, Lord will enter the kingdom of heaven, but to the contrary, those in heaven are those who do my Father's will. Many will say to me in this specific day, Lord, Lord, did we not speak inspired utterances and prophesy in your name? Now, this is a name they don't even use. Drive out demons in your name. Again, a name they never say. Or perform mighty miracles in your name. And then at that time, I will profess to them, I never knew them. You almost must depart from me, those who bring about that which is in opposition to the Torah. That's anomia. Okay, Scott, can you think of any group of people? And I was asking you this as we went off the air, which it didn't give you time to respond, that speak inspired utterances, and they prophesy, and they drive out demons, and they perform mighty miracles. Can you think of any group that does that in any religious setting at all?
Pretty much all of them do in some way, shape, or form. But
I see it in the Christian religion.
Yeah,
I don't see
definitely.
It anywhere else.
Yeah,
and I see.
They're all fighting a demon of some sort. They claim to fight demons of some sort, and various things like that. But, yeah, you're right. The Roman Catholic Church would be the big one.
Well, the Pentecostals would be real big, and the hubris of these people, they're sitting there arguing with the creator of the universe and claiming they did all these things for him. And he says, I profess to them, I never knew them. Now, again, if he's omnipresent, if he's everywhere with everybody all the time, how is it he never knew them? He just said he never knew them. That means he wasn't with them.
Yeah. He couldn't have. He couldn't have known them. If he was with them all, one of those things can't be true. So
somebody as smart as Yahweh that could create the entire universe has Alzheimer's? I mean, that's what they're saying. If he's everywhere all the time with everybody, Now, I'm going to go down to the religious copy edit, and I'm going to read what they say. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, Yahweh just used said Torahlessness, and he said, not anyone calling me Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. I know why that is. You know, he makes actually the love of his name part of being part of his family. But when we look at the religious copy edit, saying not anyone, it says, not all calling me Lord, Lord will enter the kingdom of heaven. And then it goes on, describes these people. And then instead of saying those who are Torahless, he says, it says in your common everyday book named after the sun goddess Biblio, says evildoers. Get rid of that Torah every time you can, you know. And so they wrote evildoers in there. And I just say it's pretty hard to forget somebody with, if you're, you know, you're with them 24/7 and you don't even know his name. He's with you all the time. You're with him all the time. And you don't even know his name. And I'm going to go down here to Hosea 8:4. And here's what he says. You know how Paul goes on about how over in Romans where Paul talks about all governments are only there because they've been set up by Yahweh. Remember that? It's over in Romans. But here's what Yahweh has to say about this. And this is in a book called South. He Saves, Hosea 8:4. They have set up rulers and kings, but not by me. They have appointed governors and put leaders in positions of authority whom I do not know. So, if you didn't know somebody, were you with them, Scott?
No, definitely not. No, if you didn't know them, why would you be with them?
Well, there's another religious myth that's just knocked out of the sky, isn't it? I mean, it's just he's not with there. He doesn't know everyone, doesn't claim to know everyone. You know, I'm sure there's people he just flat out doesn't want to know.
Yeah, I was going to say he doesn't want to know everyone. He doesn't want to. He doesn't care. He doesn't care about everyone. He cares about the people. He's just like people are. You care about the people that care about you. You're not, if you're going around caring about everybody, you got issues, because if you worry about everybody's problems, you're going to have a lot of issues.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people I don't want to know. As an example, I don't want to know rings of pedophiles. I don't want to know them. I don't want to be around them. I just want them dead. Okay, we were just discussing here how Yahweh doesn't know everybody. And how it really it would be a detrimental thing to know everybody. There's plenty of people that anyone in their right mind, and I'm assuming the creator of the universe, Yahweh, is in his right mind. There's any number of reasons that there's plenty of people I wouldn't want to know. Now, we also went through, I'm gonna read a second century parchment verse here, just out of a papyrus verse here that has been butchered in a New Testament. And I'm just going to read them side by side. And this is from Yaokanan, or John. Yaokanan means Yahweh is merciful. And that was his name. It wasn't John. But, you know, getting rid of all things Yah is something the religious copy editors just feel the need to do. It's like, you know, Zechariah is really Zachariah, which means remember Yah. Isaiah is Yashayah, which means salvation is from Yah, and that's got to become Isaiah. And John, of course, was really Yaokanan, and that's got to become John. It says, for the reason the Torah through Mose, that's Moses, was given, acceptance and truth through the Messiah, Yahusha, came to exist. That's what it actually says, okay? And then we go down here in a King James Version Bible. Now, this is the book that's credited to be the most accurate in the undeniable Word of God, and it says, for the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by way of Jesus Christ. Now, Yaokanan credited the acceptance of the Torah with the very existence of the Messiah Yahusha. And they just call the Torah law, and Torah does not mean law. There's not one root word that makes up the entire word Torah that means law. It means teaching. It means instructions. It means a lot of things that are all good. Tob, as an example. All these things that are good, and yet they call it law. For the law was given by Moses, but grace, and grace comes from the pagan goddesses of the Gratia. Grace is just the English transliteration of Gratia. Came by way of Jesus Christ, and that's a name that, of course, didn't exist. The J sound's only been around about 500 years in Christos, not a last name. Yahusha had a name and not a last name. He was the Messiah. He wasn't the Christ or Christo. And that leads us to Proverbs 28:9, and it says here, one who turns his ear from hearing the Torah, even his prayer shall be an abomination. So when somebody tells me that the Torah has been nailed to a pagan cross, and yet they're out praying and they're telling me God's answering their prayers all the time. You know, I used to be a Christian, you know, before I walked out of Babylon, and I saw many church services where they prayed for somebody that was, dying in a hospital, and guess what happened? They usually died. And it doesn't surprise me because Yahweh says he's not even listening to them. Does that surprise you at all, Scott?
No, not really, I guess. No, it doesn't shock me. It doesn't surprise me.
You know, I watch a lot of these whodunit shows. And one of the things that will often happen is these church groups will get together and they'll make memorials and they'll all pray while somebody's missing. You know, some child is missing or somebody that they know that they're associated with is missing. And, 4 or 5 days later, they find them dead in a ditch somewhere. And so, you know, all these prayers, I guess they just go unanswered, and then people go on talking about all these prayers that are answered. And I can understand why you...
I've noticed the big thing with people is that if something bad happens, they usually hide behind the whole, it was God's will. And, you know, that seems to be a lot of religious, super religious people seem to have that mentality of everything happens because this is what this person wanted for me to happen. And I find that ridiculous.
Yeah, imagine a little 8-year-old girl being raped by, you know, some kind of serial killer, raped and murdered. How is that Yahweh's will?
Yeah. How is a little baby getting shot in a drive-by? By a stray bullet. How is that, you know, anybody's? How is that anybody's will? Having innocent people die, and you could be thankful for good things that happen to you, but if you really step back and look at it, all good things and bad things, they all happen. You can look at the events that led to the things that happen. If you move,
they happened out of free will, didn't they?
They have
people
out of free will.
So free will.
Yep. If you move into a crappy neighborhood that has a lot of gang violence, and somebody in your family gets shot in a drive-by, well, you can go down the list and see that okay, we made some choices here, and you know if you win $30,000 in the lottery, there again, that's another thing that you decided to buy a ticket, and then you won the lottery. It was your will that did it, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at. We're at a place of free will, and you know, it's really free will that's led to the, position that the world's in today. Financial systems falling apart, families that are no longer together, wars. And, organizations like the United Nations coming up with ideas to tax us even further, like global warming might be a good example of that.
Finding ways to grab more and more control over things that, you know, your governing body shouldn't have anything to say about, whether it's, you know, gun control and things like that. Everything that you can say is evil in the world, I can look at it and say that they're probably trying to prevent your free will. The one thing that you have had, that you have for sure, is free will. And if something tries to prevent that, you probably shouldn't be listening to it.
Well, they certainly limit choice. They certainly limit choice. And that would be more in line with Satan's idea, wouldn't it, to limit choice. Like, let's say I set up a voting matrix, and I teach you in schools that all good citizens vote. And then, you know, on one side I have a group that says, we're upholding the Constitution, we're about limited government, we're about limited taxation. That all sounds good. And you vote for them, and you find out 4 years later you've got a bigger government, right? You've got bigger taxes. It's like nobody seems to be able to find freedom. And the other side says, we're for socialism and we're for communism and we believe government should run, be involved in every aspect of your life. You know, those are called Democrats. And yet either way you vote, the same thing happens.
Wouldn't that be
a great way to limit choice, give you just these two choices and they control them both? Go ahead.
I think Selfark has summed up American politics pretty well for me. When they were trying to vote on what their new mascot should be in their school, and one of them said, I want the new mascot to be a giant douche, and the other person said, well, I want it to be a turd sandwich. So kids were voting between a giant douche and a turd sandwich for who was going to be the mascot of their school. And that's
well,
how I feel about
it. South Park has got a good way of putting things. I have to say that. That's beautiful. You know, that really kind of represents where we're at today.
Yeah. South Park is great for stuff like that. And that's how I've always looked at voting for one of the two major parties as that right there. You're picking the lesser of two evils most of the time. You're saying, well, I agree with that kind of
thing. You know, most people actually say that's what they're doing.
Well, that's exactly
hold
it.
Hold my nose and vote. That's become, you know, kind of a catchphrase. Hold my nose and vote.
And whenever,
why should you have to do that?
When everybody says that, I always think that, you know, so then you're knowingly voting for evil. I'm voting for the lesser of two evils. Well, that's still an evil. That shouldn't be your own
choice. Yeah, the lesser of two evils. Yeah, it's like I'm going to give you a choice between cyanide and hemlock.
Do you want to lose your arm or your leg? You make the choice.
I'm not putting my seal of approval on either one of them, and that's the way I look at it. And I have to tell you, that's where we kind of find ourselves today, and it's because of free will. People have chosen to have governments lord over them. And speaking of lording over people, isn't that what the religious deities do? They have you get on your knees, and they lord over you. And any institution that's involved in this kind of behavior is not an institution that's condoned by Yahweh. And I know that because he says it in his words. You know, we can go back to Dabarim. It means words. It's been corrupted to Deuteronomy. But in his words, Yahweh says, indeed, Yahweh, your God, will kneel down for your benefit in all your endeavors and in all the work of your hands so that you will be altogether and totally happy. Now, who's doing the kneeling down there? Does your child, when they're a little baby, need to kneel down to help you, or do you kneel down to help them?
No, if you're any good at it, you go down to them.
Yeah. Then we go over here to Shemoth. That means names. Shemoth means names. Shem means names. Shemoth means names. And in Exodus 23:25, he says, serve alongside Yahweh, your God, and he will kneel down and bless your bread and water and will remove disease and suffering from your midst. Again, Yahweh is the one doing the kneeling down and helping. He doesn't need my help. I'm talking about Yahweh's very nature being corrupt, in the religious material that makes a mockery of his words and has him omnipresent and has worldwide floods and has Adam as the first man. You know, Yahweh is constantly describing his people as upright. And if you look at Yahweh's name in pictorial Hebrew, what you see is there's this hand kind of reaching down and over to help this person who's standing up with their arm reached up. And in between, there's a tent peg, that wah. And then over at the end, there's this other hay, and it's another person standing up. And so what we see is a home being enlarged in there in the middle, and Yahweh's hand down there stretched out, reaching down to help them up. And Yahweh's talking about people that are taken in the teruah harvest here, and he explains what's happening to them, and he says they travel with her, and that would be the Ruach Kodesh, upright in his presence. So, see, his people are always depicted as being upright, standing up, having an eye to eye. As you know, this is a real relational type of thing. It's not a religious organization. He doesn't have holy days. He does have parties and celebrations. And personally, I like celebrations and parties. Maybe that's just me. And I don't like to be around religious people. Never have liked it. They've never tripped my trigger, you know.
Yeah, I've never been much to be hang out with them, mainly because it always gets down to what their viewpoint on things, and that's a little bit okay. But I agree with you 100%. Parties are a lot of fun. Yeah, you know, getting together with friends and family, that a lot of times that's fun. That's a lot of fun.
Now, I'm just going to point another example out here in Bereshith, which is in the beginning, 12:2. He says, and I will of my own volition constantly kneel down, love, lowering myself to bless and benefit you. So, you know, who's lowering themselves down? Now, wouldn't it be if you came up and you were bowing down to him, you know, sort of like it was kowtow to Mao, you know, how they used to, over there in China, when Mao was wiping out 60 million people, they all had to get on their knees and kowtow to Mao and take a beating or get killed, whichever, you know, the people in charge decided to do. Mao wanted power, and he was afraid of losing power, just like Stalin. And so, you know, he wanted people beaten down around him, and they had to kowtow to him. Now, do you really think that, you know, here's Yahweh. He says, you know, if his words are true, he's saying, I will consistently kneel down in love, lowering myself to bless and benefit you. Does that sound like somebody that wants you to kowtow to him? Or somebody with Mao's nature? It doesn't to me.
Well, look at it this way. If you, let's go back to your kids again. If you are talking to your kid and they keep looking down at the floor and they keep avoiding eye contact, don't you tell them to look up at me, look at me, talk to me. Don't you tell them to look up, lift your head up. I tell Neil, he's my girlfriend's son, but he calls me dad, and I tell him all the time that, you know, you don't have to be, you can tell me anything you want, and you don't have to be afraid of me. Because I'm not going to do anything to hurt you, because if that's what I wanted to do, I would do that. But I don't want to. And he gets in these modes where he puts his head down and he doesn't want to look. And I make sure that, raise your head, look at me, talk to me. And when he does that, he calms down and he you can see strength build within him. Why would you want anybody to be fearful of you? It makes no sense. So having
can you fear what you can you love what you fear?
No, you can't. And if you do something out of fear, you're not doing it from a place of love either. So it makes no sense to have people just blatantly worship you. And, yeah, you're so great. Okay, stop.
And yet Yahweh wants a relational type of situation. He wants to be known in a relational sense. You know, one of the things that we see in every religion that I'm aware of is submission and submissive behavior. And this is what Yahweh said to the clerics. So then this condition is to you, O clerics, if you do not listen and if you do not place it on your heart to give credit and high value to my name, says Yahweh, of the spiritual regiment, I will send out in among you the curse of kneeling down. And that's the signature mark of all religion.